Blog Talk Radio.
This is Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Alfred Muhammad II. I am here with my father, Imam Alfred Muhammad, and we're here discussing the, I'm just going to be here interviewing him, asking him a couple of questions about, you know, the new year, what should African Americans be doing for the new year, and one second. Sorry for that delay. We had a technical issue, but like I said, I'll be going on. We'll be on Facebook Live, so if you want to follow my father, he'll be on Facebook Live at Imam Alfred Muhammad. So, and it'll be shared all across Facebook. I'll share it on my pages, which is regular Alfred Muhammad. So, without further ado, I'm going to start off with the interview, and I'm going to go live. All right, so I'm going to start off with the interview. If you're tuning in with us here on Religion Means Alive with Imam Alfred, I'm just going to do a couple of interviews. My father told me to interview him now that I came back down from Atlanta. He's like, Alfred, you got to interview me. You know all this stuff. You know, I know you go to Morehouse. You meet all these enlightened young individuals, African-American males, et cetera. And no telling what you didn't came back knowing, good, bad, negative, otherwise. But I always assure him that I'm doing pretty good, you know, grade-wise and all those, you know, things of that nature. But he just wanted me to give him an interview for the 7 o'clock hour. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start off by saying good evening, brother man.
Good evening, Alfred, and good evening to our Facebook and radio audience. And as I always greet you with peace, be on our noble and honorable listening audience. And I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Our audience is honorable and noble. And when leaders understand that they're serving an honorable and noble audience, it causes a different reaction in the spirit of the leader. And it causes a different spirit and a reaction in the public.
Mm. All right, well, we'll get to leadership in a minute, and we'll get to the public as well. But first off, I'm going to start off with an alarming statistic in with African Americans. Last year, Chicago had over 762 homicides. That's more than twice the number in New York City, which pulled in, unfortunately, 335. And this source is coming from ABC News. And these 762 homicides were out of 4,331 shooting victims, accounted for 17.5% of the total population in Chicago. Now, that's clearly a problem, but what do you believe must be done in order to deter these problems?
It is an alarming statistic. This statistic has been long in coming. And my leader, T.G. Mamouardi Muhammad, in 1977, formed an organization called Light Arrest Pioneer Patrol. And very little came of it because he didn't get support inside his community. He didn't get support from the political class in Chicago and from the religious class in Chicago and the civic class in Chicago. So this is the chicken truly coming home to roost. Chicago, in my opinion, is the most important city to African Americans. It is a disgraceful, disastrous situation. Why is it that the case? It's the home of the President of the United States of America, the first African American president. It is the home of the world's greatest leader, Sis Muhammad himself, the Imam Wardi Muhammad, the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. It is the home of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. It's the home of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. It's a terrible indictment on the people on the south side and the west side of Chicago. The people that survived the debacle in it to them. Man that was killed, dragged out of his bed. And today, his descendants, I don't mean that he had physical descendants, the people who had come from Mississippi and Arkansas where the worst treatment in America are now acting out where they are the new KKK. They are the Ken Killing Gang. And it has to be a stop put to it. And the charge goes on the religious leadership. We have formed a movement called the United, the Urban Peace Initiative. And Chicago is in our people. It is in our scope where we are planning to put a tremendous focus. I don't want to tell all the things we plan to do. Because the two-cent leaders will march down Michigan Avenue and make it a political situation. And really what they should be doing is mobilizing mass numbers in the neighborhood. Now, this is not the fault of the government. This is not the fault of Mayor Rahm Emanuel. This is the fault of bad, of inactive moral leadership.
Okay, well, all right, well, now that you answered that question, why do you believe this minus Chicago, why do you believe African-Americans are killing each other all across the country? I mean, Chicago isn't number one. It's just probably the most televised, city where the killings take place. But Memphis, I believe, is number one. Memphis, Tennessee, that place like Memphis, Tennessee, you know, right here in Jersey, we got Newark. New York is still bad. Compton, Watts. You know, these areas are still bad areas. And why do you believe things haven't changed?
It's really clear. It's very clear to me. I have studied, as you know, I spent a lot of time at the Center for Modern Psychoanalysis studying this problem, studying trauma. People who are traumatized will re-traumatize others. And so it's also a theological problem. Because if I shoot a person that I consider the devil, well, Brother Man, what do you mean that you consider the devil? Our people have been conditioned to think that the Caucasian is God. And our subcontinent, I don't care whether they claim to be Muslim, I don't care whether they claim to be Christian, they still think the white man is the God. And Imam Muhammad came into office saying we have to remove all images that portray the divine. That same African-American, a Caucasian, could walk down the street, he would not kill him. But he sees the African-American as the personification of the devil and evil. And therefore, he can say, I smoked that nigga. I killed that SOB with rage because he's killing himself. So we have to bring that to the attention of the people. We can't tell the people a lie, say it's the police calling you to do this. No. It's not, we got to have gun control. We have to have mind control. Nothing you can do to cause me to kill one of my own people because I have too much love for them. I have a sacred respect for human life. That's me talking. Secondly, I know where the people, I've studied the people who have come from Mississippi and Arkansas, predominantly Chicago. Well, that's one factor. They come from the most violent areas where segregation and white supremacy reigned. So 80% of what's going on in Chicago is a direct result of violence and hatred that's been predicated against them. And since there hasn't been any intervention, they're continuing the vicious cycle of murder with impunity. Secondly, there's been a breakdown in the family. Thirdly, there's been most of all been breakdown in faith. And I tell young men, I said, brother, you may kill his brother. I worked in correctional facilities. But there's a final judgment. So I hope Reverend Jackson, I hope Minister Farrakhan. I know Minister Farrakhan doesn't really have the tools to tell the people this. But I know Reverend Jackson does. Because he conducts funerals. I already conduct funerals. He knows that there's going to be a final judgment. And that people have to understand that they are not only accountable to themselves and to the time. They're accountable to God, and they will have another hearing. Johnny Cochran won't be there to defend them. They won't have Epley Baker. They won't have the lawyer that R. Kelly had that got him off with charges. They will be faced with God and have consciousness, and we have to tell these young people that. We have to tell them that they will be responsible to Almighty God, and our people have to come back to that. Our people hid that. In there, for the last 60 years, a Trojan horse has been stuck in the African-American community, and I saw it. 60 years of neglect of God and faith, 60 years of just let it all hang up, 60 years of accepting our enemies' cultural war upon us, it has been settled. And we have fought into the scheme of Satan.
Right, well, that's pretty heavy. But what percentage of this do you believe is African-Americans' fault? Because, you know, sometimes you hear debates about this all the time where it's like, well, at the end of the day, you're doing it. Your people are doing it. You know, this is a lot of things that, you know, police say and a lot of law enforcement say. It's like, at the end of the day, you are doing it. But what percentage of it do you believe
80%.
Okay.
80% of the problem is historical. It's historical because it's been breeded. I said on this broadcast before, I am the son of a slave. I'm probably the son, the grandson of a slave. My sociological, psychological heritage is terror. So if my mother placed terror in me, when I placed terror in my own children, I thank God I got help. Oh, so I didn't do it. I studied. I believe heavily in psychotherapy, psychological help and intervention. But I was recognized at a very early age that Virgin Mae Desmond was a sincere person. But she was a terrorized person. And as a result, she put terror in our children. Now, and her children, well, but I had something else to ameliorate against it. I went to church. I had good teachers. And they gave me appropriate methods for dealing with anger. So I would say 80% is historical. I say to the liberals and I say to the so-called conservatives, you have not lived in that shoes. I'm happy to hear House Speaker Newt Gingrich say, I've lived as a black man, African-American man. He's right. So 80% is our own, 80% is historical response. 20% is our responsibility. Nobody forced you to pick that gun up and blow that brother up right now. Nobody forced you to act that out. Nobody told you to be the big bad wolf. You had a choice. I don't care how much power you spent, you didn't have to pick up a gun. I don't care what you're going through. Frederick Douglass had it worse than you. Booker D. Washington had it worse than you. My parents had it worse than you, and they didn't resort to that. So this rage, this anger has to be stopped.
Well, talk more at length about, I was going to originally intend to ask you this question, but talk more about that 20% that you believe is our fault.
Well, here's the 20% is our fault. 20% is our fault. Basically, I would say 10% of it is bad leadership. Horrible leadership in the church. The message is only interested in getting people to join. The church is only getting people to join. They don't have the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. Martin Luther King was a pastor, co-pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church. He was also the pastor of Lakes Avenue Baptist Church. But Dr. King had a public message. And that's why the walls of segregation went down. That's why Dr. King went into the pool hall. That's why he was able to raise up lieutenants that went out on the streets and taught men. They had a public theology. The masjid is only interested in getting people to join. If they're not joined, they don't have a message for them. I remember in the Naismith song when we had a message of uplift. And we told African Americans, you're cheapening your lives when you engage in violence and vulgarity and vandalism and destructive behavior. Yes, the impulse is there. We don't deny those impulses. We don't deny those strong urges. To deny them is to cause them to come out. Let's not lie to our people. Right there in Chicago, there's opportunities for people to get a GED, to get educated. They got they too depressed and too downright feel that they can't do that, then that's the job of the leadership to inspire them. Mm-hmm. And we intend to go on every 10 blocks in Chicago and preach to our people and get them to take a pledge. We're not going to lie to them. We're not going to blame the police. Huh? We're not going to blame the government. We're going to take on responsibility for our own lives. And I'm happy that you're home from Morehouse and you're doing community service. I know that Dr. Howard K. Thurman is smiling somewhere in the cosmos. I know that Benjamin Elijah Mays is smiling in the cosmos. Since we're talking about Chicago, I know that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Imam D. Muhammad, those great leaders are smiling. That the young man that's gone to Morehouse, that they dreamed of going to. You're walking not in the shadow of Dr. Martin Luther King. You're walking in his light. We need a non-violence movement among us. We need a movement among us towards education, a movement towards business development, a movement, but you can't get any of that until you have a peace movement. So our focus is the Urban Peace Initiative. You'll be hearing more about that. It'll be coming in. We're going to target some cities. We have some specific work that we're going to do to stop this killing.
Well, Donald Trump has defined himself as, back to Chicago.
Let me correct you.
President-elect
Donald Trump.
President-elect.
I want to say something about that while I'm on it. I was taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to call people by the title. That's the beginning of the end. Ice-T popularized the idea of beating people upside the head, the old folk, not listening to it. Well, actually, he was reiterating what I was told in the 60s. That don't trust anybody over 30. And also in the late 60s, we saw a turn down institution. So I'm not going to go for that. Mr. President-elect Trump, I respect the will of the American people. I disagree with the will of the American people. But as the president of the elected President Donald J. Trump, now you can continue.
Okay. All right. Well, President-elect Donald Trump has defined himself as a law and order candidate. And one said that and tweeted a couple of days ago, he said, Chicago's murder rate is a record-setting 4,331 shooting, has a record-setting 4,331 shooting victims with 762 murders in 2016. Now, we all know he's not the best with grammar, but that's the point. He said, if mayor can't do anything, he must ask for federal help. So he's referring to Mayor Rahm Emanuel, of course. So what do you make of this? We know, before you go, that Donald Trump is historically is taken from another president that you probably remember, President Richard Milhouse Nixon, who defined himself coming up as, he had the silent majority. He defined himself as a law and order candidate. So what do you make of this tweet? Because it sounds a lot like martial law to some, and to others it sounds like, hey, man, the guy's just addressing an issue. So
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's death rates, but I think what is more important, African Americans have to understand that there's cultural traps set for them by the cultural elite. I'm talking to people that produce these movies, these radio shows. They invite them to it. But I'm going to tell you what the Quran says. It says, when the matter is decided, Satan will say, I only called and you came. Nobody told you to pick that gun up and blow that brother's brains away. Nobody told you to beat and bully that brother. Nobody told you to rape that young brother. And that's a big issue we face in our community. We have to face squarely a moral imperative. Now, with respect to the president-elect of the East United States of America, I wish him well, but I'm going to marshal the forces of our community. Just like we marshal the forces to break down the barriers of segregation and white supremacy, we're going to break down the violence and the reaction to segregation. Much of this is a psychological reaction. So I would hope the president would be even tipper. I remember President Richard Milhouse Nixon. But we have given these people an excuse. We've given them ground. We've given them foundation to attack us. So what does a preacher do? What does a civic leader do? They address the internal Jesse Lewis Jackson should be joining me. The Honorable Minister Louis Francis should be joining me. I've already gotten the support of Imam Worth Dean Muhammad II. He said he would join me. And this movement, a massive interfaith movement. I was for an African-American movement. Now I want the African-American, I want Christians, I want Jews, I want Hindus, I want massive marches throughout the South Side, just like Dr. King did. I want to march it all over the West Side. And I want to call our people's attention away from the violence. I want people to go into these public schools and tell them to stop the bullying, stop the raping, and be able then to come and get volunteer psychological students from Morehouse to go in and do peer counseling, to work with people, to call them out of this insanity. This is a mental illness. But you know, if you act mentally ill, you know what happens. You can't be put in a straitjacket. So let us be very careful that we don't put ourselves in a position to be placed in a straitjacket of martial law.
Speaking of the president, like, talk more in depth about what do you think of? What do you think about the type of campaign he ran? Him as a person, well, maybe not him as a person, but a lot of his rhetoric. What do you think about his rhetoric?
Well, I think the president of the United States, president-elect of the United States, was operating on a lot of the desperation of Caucasians in America, and we can see the history of the United States with Reconstruction Red Hugs. I mean, Caucasians are full of fear, a lot of anger. I told a Caucasian man on the train, I convinced him after a 1 hour ride, that Mr. President-elect Trump, I don't think has his best interests at heart at all. I think that when we see the appointment of the cabinet, I don't see anybody looking like an average Caucasian. I see all the other people there. So I think that this frustration, this desperation, these lies that have been told to them. But I think it's our fault again, because we didn't stand up for the position of the most sanest leader that God has put on the earth. That's Imam Worth Dean Muhammad. If we stood up and build a massive interfaith movement to show Christians, Muslims, and Jews working together, to show the picture, then the crazy, mad people that masquerade as Muslims would have been looking like damn fools that they are. So he wouldn't have had any weapons. If we had implemented the Imam Muhammad's economic program and opened up millions of small businesses and hired people, the people would have been looking to us and they'd say, a Southern Caucasian would say, you know, I like that Mohammed guy. I ain't no good for me the Muslim. I'm going to keep on eating my ham. But I'm going to tell you something. That Muslim guy gave me a job. And I'm getting a good paying job. He treats me good. You know what? He gave me a Christmas ball. He gave me a Christmas ball. Yeah, he even gave me a Christmas ball. He said, that's your celebration. And he gave me a big bonus. He followed what Prophet Muhammad said. Treat your workers as your equal. And if the Muslim businessmen paid their workers good and encouraged African Americans, we would win them. And we're going to win Americans. We're going to win the will of the American people, not to become Muslims, but to become the best Americans. I say I'm an all-American. So I think in the absence of a cogent political posture on the part of us, in a vacuum, Mr. Trump came. And he's quite a showman. I was trained, as you know, as a salesman, so I know the sales technique. I know the showmanship, and we have had one of the greatest shows on earth. I mean, he was running for the president by the time he started The Apprentice, and he'd been successful. We can't knock him. He created a great persona. I pray that Mr. Trump is reasonable, and I think he will be reasonable. I think that cooler heads will prevail in America. I think there are greater angels in America that will prevent him from going over the hill. I wish him the best of success. It wasn't Mr. Secretary Clinton that won the presidency. I've often said that I would have been out the next day doing the same thing I'm doing now, urging our people to be responsible, to end the violence, create peace in our families, to be the best fathers they can be. And some of you all may say, I'm talking down to African Americans. No, I'm talking African Americans up. I'm with the Dr. Benjamin Mays. They talked us up. I told you on this show one day that Dr. Mays corrected me, my anger. So So I got my people talking down, and he was talking me up. Dr. Virgil Alexander Woods, he's in Texas somewhere, taught me up. I didn't know how to say Nehemiah to Nehemiah, or something. I didn't even pronounce it, the scriptural name of the prophet that rebuilt the city. Dr. Woods corrected me. Dr. Timothy Preston Mitchell corrected me. The man Joaquin Muhammad corrected me. And I correct young men today, and I will continue to correct them because I love them. I'm not going to let them go down the path. I'm not going to let a man get in the elevator and know that there's no elevator coming, and he go down the shaft. Then I'm responsible. Actually, I'm engaging in negligence. It's called depraved indifference to human life. And I will never be guilty of that. By God's permission.
How does the election mean that you also talked about how this is somewhat of an indictment on both sides, also with the Caucasian American, you know, with the Caucasian people who are just simply choosing Donald Trump out of desperation, which also indicted the African Americans today. You indicted them for saying how a lack of leadership created a vacuum. Can you talk more at length about where the leadership has gone within this country? Well, for African Americans and Black
people. I was talking to a person from another country and who was trying to put together a program in an African American predominantly African city. Talking about all the opportunities. The leadership is not Dr. King. They're not Hosea Williams. They're not Booker T. Washington. They're basically crass opportunities. They could care less about the people. They're looking for what they can fatten their pockets with. That includes the imams, too. They don't care about the people. So as a direct result of that fact, and not have a love of people, it's like, you know, I love you as my son. And you know I'm pretty hard on you. I'm going to crush you. I'm not going to impress you. I might depress you. But I'm interested in getting you to be the best human being on earth. That's the same thing I want for my people. I want my people to be the most educated, most affluent, most refined, more ordered. And I start with feeling strong individuals, telling them that they have the blood of Rosa Parks, refuse to sit down and be a second-class citizen. She stood up. Fannie Lou Hamer, who refused to be a second-class or third-class citizen, risked her life, and now others have risked their lives to see that we have a right to the tree of life. Great men like A.J. Gaston, businessman, sold peanuts, withheld those long, short-term needs, urges, I should say, to have a party and have a good time, put his money away and became a multi-millionaire. That's what we have. S.B. Fuller, who I laugh when I say about S.B. Fuller, because Mr. Fuller said, and I read the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. I never found what Mr. Fuller said in the Bible. He said that the Bible says, he told the salesman, sell or go to hell. And he motivated them, and they created a door-to-door book way before Amway. And I think about the great lady, the great business lady, Madam C.J. Walker. These great people is what we should put before our people. They were self-sacrificing. They were loving. They were aggressive. We know the Army Lodge Bomb was aggressive and reforming our people. Many men and women can say they smoke cigarettes. They put them down. They had bad diets. They put them down. They had various vagrant behaviors. They put them down. Now, all of us didn't come into the nation this moment with those kind of behaviors. But these leaders called us to advancement. They called us to economic reality, budgeting. And these same life skills must be taught to our people today.
Okay. We hate to get too political here on religion.
We love to get political.
Being that it's
and I wanted to ask, go ahead.
Okay, well, you know, like I said, you know.
Let me just say this too, political, while we have, because I didn't finish the thought that do think that the political parties, this has to be a realignment. And the vast majority of the American people don't even vote. That tells us something. We're talking about a very, very small turnout. And in the African American community in 2010, 2014, we didn't even come out.
No, definitely. There was definitely a failure to get the African American turnout in 2010 and 2014. You know, African Americans. President Obama, you know, he indicted African Americans for that slightly. You know, he gave them a slight, you know, what we would call a spanking, essentially.
At Howard University.
At Howard University.
You and I were there.
Mm-hmm.
He was right.
He
was mild compared to the way I'm going to talk to him.
Yeah.
I have no intentions of cutting out people in their slack. Because I know we're the greatest people on earth. We've gone through some very horrible, horrific experiences. So if a coach has a great team and they slack it and they can't do little points in a basketball game, that coach is, I've seen coaches get on the sideline and scream and curse. I'm not going to curse, but I damn sure might scream.
Because
I'm going to coach out people to the top.
Right. Yeah, so he and at Howard he definitely got on African Americans by turnout because it made his administration a lot more miserable.
Yes.
You know, McConnell became leader. You know, leader.
Senator McConnell was a part of a group that Senator Rob Portman said that they were not going to let the president have anything. That's a white supremacy attitude. They laid the foundation for Mr. Trump. And for President-elect Trump. So Rob Portman, Senator Rob Portman that he is, said that they decided that the stymie and Mr. McConnell, that is Senator, United States Senator McConnell, is from Alabama. And he said, we're going to break him. So I have witnessed people breaking horses. I've witnessed people breaking cows. We got a cow. My daddy had to break the cow so the cow could be milked. You break animals. And I also know from the history of slavery, from Roll Jordan Roll by Eugene Genovese, that African Americans was also breaking them. They brought them down to the Caribbean to break them.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought he was an up-pity Negro that didn't scratch where there were no itches, didn't shuffle where there was no place to shuffle. They didn't like that. And they were breaking that. And it's not that they were white supremacists. But Americans always hit a subtle skin game.
Mm. Play, so they played on race.
They
played on race.
Mr. Strong Thurmond, great United States Strong Thurmond, was serving segregation now, segregation forever. Meanwhile, he was sleeping with his black maid and got a baby by him.
Absolutely amazing. Race is definitely something that a lot of politicians, and there's...
And
like,
African Americans play it too.
Both parties play
too
it.
Much.
Really,
too
both
much.
Parties play it, and it has caused the country to be divided.
Yeah.
That's just popular
that's
opinion.
A fact.
It's a fact.
And I don't disagree with Professor Cornell West, my friend. Race does matter. Of course, I don't use the term race in his sense.
Mm-hmm.
We're not a race. We're an ethnic group. And we are part of many, many ethnic groups in America. But race, there is a race, and it's a competition for education, the competition for business, the competition for culture, the competition for governmental position. But I do believe that there must be a realignment in this country if we are to be successful in building the greatest country known to man.
Talk more about President Obama. What do you think of his time in office from 2009 on?
I'm going to go out on the limb and say he's the greatest president of the United States of America that's ever had. Now, why are you going to say that, Eman? You have said the history of the presidents from George Washington, who happened to be from George Washington State, right? Thomas Jefferson, yes. Why? The biggest and most implacable sin that America ever committed was the sin of putting a person in third-class citizenship. Two-thirds of men, the president wrote that. That's number one. Number two, this country was on the brink of a total economic collapse. And he approached the economic situation with courage. Now, if he had the support of the American people and the Democratic Party hadn't sold him out, that probably should have been a $2 trillion stimulus program. But they didn't support that. Number two, we masquerade as Muslim. Osama bin Laden, where is he at now? Oops, he's not around. What about Allah? Oops, he's not around. President Obama. And he should have been killed. And these people who go and engage in mass killings should be killed. They should be hunted down and murdered like the beast that they are. And President Barack Hussein Obama did that. Could he have done more? Perhaps, if he had the cooperation of the American people. But he had an intractable, expansionist group of people who were determined to make him a failure. And I hate to say it. I'm almost getting angry. I think that Clinton sat on the sideline and didn't do anything to support him. I think the Democratic Party didn't rally. And I think that the biggest problem was the African-American leadership, who was jealous of him from the beginning. And they never rallied behind the president. There should have been mass demonstrations in this country, not as black folks, but as Americans, demanding that the American, that the political process. I was tempted, I didn't have the wherewithal, to lead a march on Mitch McConnell's office and tell him to pass the stimulus bill. People were still unemployed. There needs to be some drastic, but I'm going to say this to African Americans. Why don't y'all have a think tank to come up with new trade policies? I think that we have to be very careful how we approach China. We have to be very careful how we support this. Let's not lie to the people. Vietnam. China was just moving stuff to Vietnam. And let's also be honest with the American people. I'm getting too far in politics. This is a debtor nation. Now, Mr. President-elect Trump hasn't told the people this country's in debt.
A lot of it. A lot.
But I want to also say that the African Americans have $1 to $2 trillion coming into their hands. So what in the hell are we doing to build up ourselves that others have done in America?
So we've talked about this this really disastrous state of American politics today that was almost receding, man, seeping its way into the rest of the world. How does this relate to African Americans today? You talked about think tanks. You talked about, you know, a think tank is just a policy maker. Essentially,
yeah.
A bunch of smart people get together, and I want to say smart, talented people get together and come up with policies and things of that nature. But what else do African Americans, what other institutions do African Americans need to establish in order to really get a foot in the door?
Well, not a foot in the door. Actually, be in the door. We don't want a foot in the door. We want our whole body in the door. We have 120 African American colleges and universities, HBCUs they call them. I just call them African American. I call them American universities that is supported, that is founded, that African Americans are responsible for. We should see these as American institutions, predominantly ruled, led by us. Howard University is in serious trouble. Meharry, that produces most of the African American doctors historically, is in serious trouble. Why? The money we spend on scotch and reefers and weed
and
Hennessy is enough. I'm not going to promote Hennessy here. And I'm not going to give any of these people that brand name, but I'm going to tell you, there's enough money to make Howard a world class university. So what we can do is what Booker D. Washington said. Told them, cast down your buckets where you are, and what the great noble Marcus Garvey said, but it was reiterated by the Amadeus Muhammad, up you mighty people, you can accomplish what you will. We can build African-American education institutions. We can build African-American clinics to work on mental health, to build family life, to build greater fathers. I've already started a movement called, and it's an adjunct to the peace movement, the United Men's Movement. Not for Muslims, not for Christians, and even for atheists, for all kinds of African American men. And we're going to make better fathers, better sons. We're down hands with Brother Adib Shaka to have a Father Son Men and Boys Association teach us how to be better fathers, better sons, better men, and better boys, and fight to be the best.
Right. All right, so we talked about institutions. You talked about what African Americans need to do, what they need to get set up in order to get into the door. So talk more at length about your Urban Peace Initiative. And what does it intend to accomplish long-term, short-term?
Short-term, the Urban Peace Initiative is to go into the neighborhood our people are never going to come out. They're going to forget anything. Our people are conditioned to travel no more than 10 problems. So we intend to go in the neighborhood just like you would run a political campaign. Because a politician running for office may speak in 10 different places. So we have, I thank Almighty God I have that energy. I've been a salesman. I work as a living, currently work as a salesman. I make the big pictures. So I'm going to go into these neighborhoods, hopefully with some of the entertainers, and rally our people, and take a pledge of nonviolence. And then it will follow up with young people like you and others, conflict resolution, anti-beef squad, maybe guys who've been who've been in jail, who know violence, will go out and convince a lot of these beta males who will just end a violent lifestyle because they don't know any better. Let them convince them to come out of the violence. I also am for raising up maybe even armed men to go through these neighborhoods and patrol these neighborhoods and smash the crime rate in these neighborhoods. Stop the stick-up men. Stop the men who are violent. Stop the rapes that are going on. Catch the rapists and force them to the police and have them arrested.
Eventually I was going to get to it. You can't get through a lot of these interviews with really any African American leader without talking about, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement and how it relates to police brutality. Tell me what do you think about the Black Lives Matter movement and the current state of police, you know, in this country?
The intention, as I understand the Black Lives Matter movement, is the intention to say Lives Matter. It does. However, I don't think enough emphasis has been placed on that it does matter. Because if it does matter, we wouldn't see the kind of horrific killing. Now, I know that there are 7,000 killings of African Americans by African Americans. I also know that there's 175 killings of African Americans by the police. I can never condone police killings, illegal killings by people, extrajudicial killings, and nobody can condone them. I don't condemn all policemen. I've worked in law enforcement, been around law enforcement. So I know all law enforcement is not bad. I'm not here to make the law enforcement the antagonist. I'm here to see a cooperation between them. I don't want people who are here to divide and confuse people. So in essence, I respect the intentions of Black Lives Matter. I wouldn't use the term Black Lives Matter. I will say Human Lives Matter. I know why they say that. So, I'm for us first accepting our humanity. Obviously, you know why I say that. Now, I know some people will get very confused here. If I'm going to say this at the risk of alienating, I was a part of what they call the press dubs, the Black Muslims. We were never the Black Muslims. I'm like, I'm going to call lost our names, but I'm never called the Black Muslims. It was a Christian preacher by the name of C. Eric Lincoln who wrote of us as Black Muslims. We saw ourselves as Muslims. So I have played the Black flag for a long, long time. So nobody can out-black me, you know. But at some point, you have to reach your human flag. And there was used to be a fly spray to kill flies that said Black flag. I have to tell you, the Black flag doesn't kill flies anymore. No, we have a lot of superflies still in our neighborhood.
Mm.
So, in essence, I'm for any matter movement that addresses our problems. I'm for a fairness committee in our neighborhoods to make sure we adjudicate, and any deceptive, crooked law enforcement person should be punished to the fullest extent of the law.
With that being said, do you believe that there is a slight contradiction in the way that, you know, a lot of people say that African Americans kill each other all the time. A lot of, you know, people from the outside looking in, particularly, you know, sometimes people who are not of, you know, Black or African American, they say all the time, they say, well, African Americans kill each other all the time. You know, they're in Chicago, they're in places like North, they're in Los Angeles, they're killing each other all the time. So how are they going to tell me, how are they going to get on police when they can't even stop killing themselves? So do you believe that is a contradiction on the part of African Americans, or a bit of hypocrisy?
Only an African American leader such as myself who says it's wrong to I hope Mr. Dylan Roof is put to death. Any other person that illegally took someone's life and can be proven beyond any doubt, I don't want no reason for that, I doubt, a cold, capricious killer should die. Clearly. That I want to make explicit, crystal clear, as Mr. President Richard Nixon says. Now, with respect to us having moral authority, you can't have moral authority when you have a bunch of contradictions. Until you're willing to condemn Ray Ray, until you're willing to condemn Keisha, until you're willing to condemn murderers and rapists in our community, that Negro, Mr. Coach, said there's no black on black crime. I wonder why he moved out of West Baltimore. That's a lie. That's to deny our humanity. We have a humanity, so we're going to have corrupt people among us too. We had them even on the plantation. We had them in Africa. They got purified when they went through the Middle Passage. But some, not everybody that was on the plantation was good. Some of them were robbing people. They were out in the swamp. They didn't affirm the white man or the black man. So we have to understand that we have predators among us. I live with them. We have to condemn them. And you know, many of the people who are in the Black Lives Matter movement are actually, some of them have been heavily influenced by Karl Marx. Some of them are bad leaders. And much of the left people, including Angela Davis, who probably condone the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, I'm not condemning the Black Lives Matter. I want to make that clear. I'm not condemning that movement. Any healthy effort to help our people, I'm going to condone. However, I think I have a best message. I think I represent the middle path for our people. I don't condone police brutality. I don't condone police killings. But I don't condone African-American criminals. Now, I want to respect Angela Davis, who wants to eliminate prisons. He wants to eliminate prisons. Sister Angela, Professor Dr. Angela Davis, I hope you're watching. Criminals, the people who created havoc, the predators. Oh, really, man? You say yes. Drug people prey on each other. Nah, somebody break in my house, I'd kill them. They're here to oppress the masses. The stick-up man oppresses the masses of our people. The criminals among African Americans oppress the African American people. The rapists among African American people. He is a destroyer of African American women. Doesn't Black Lives Matter? I'm asking. Well, so if Black Lives Matter, then the young boy that just got smashed over the head or shot, does this life matter? Does this mother matter? Black lives really have to matter.
Just to segue on a little branch off of that. Professor Angela Davis talked about eliminating private prisons, or is she referring to private prisons?
Prisons, period.
Well, that doesn't
Sister Angela, I want her to move those people into her gated community. Now, Professor Michelle Alexander has been talking about the mass incarceration. God bless, I heard she's now in New York and will be at New York Theological Seminar. I hope we can download her. But if I'm correct in understanding Professor Michelle Alexander, her husband is a United States, assistant United States attorney for the Northern District of Ohio. It means he's prosecuting criminals. So we have to be fair. People see the hypocrisy among us. And they see people creating an industry out of our misery. And I know some people say, oh, you want to do, you've been around for a long time, you're just trying to become the leader. No, I ain't trying to become one. I am one. But my boss is not some movement. My boss is God. Huh? And whether you believe in God or not, that's your business. But I'm guided by the scripture. I'm guided by the same thing that Dr. King was guided by. I'm guided by your all, so y'all love Minister Malcolm. First and foremost, Minister Malcolm was a man of scripture. Now, all our people were men who feared God. We've never had a leader before who didn't fear and rever God and rever people. One of my problems with the public elections, they don't have no real respect for God. And to go into the church. I don't know whether most of you all know it or not, but for 200 years, we were not even allowed in the church.
Just segueing, coming back off of that, about the whole thing with private prison things, I just wanted to know a little bit more information about that. But back to African-American leadership now, and this is going to be one of my final questions. Do you believe the African-American leadership is doing its job? I know you talked about it before, a little bit before, but I'm just going question by question. Do you believe the African-American leadership has really done
its job? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's ludicrous. It's absurd. We wouldn't have this discussion if they were. No. You wouldn't have Mickey's Fried Chicken. You wouldn't have the African American colleges, Knoxville College or Shell. St. Paul's is closed up. Huh? How in the hell could they be doing that job when this is happening? Mass killings in Chicago by us? Huh? Mr. Farrakhan living in luxury? Jesse Jackson, millions of dollars, speaking engagement, and they doing our job.
What about his Rainbow Coalition?
Seems to me to be a storm coalition, not a rainbow. Rainbows come after a storm. But it doesn't seem to be doing very much. He's right in the heart of Chicago. He's too busy bashing the president. As he said, he wants to pull the president's testicles out. This is the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, whom I happen to admire. Found my that cancer. No, he's not on the job. If he were working for a corporation and he had these kind of results, he would be fired summarily. If Mr. Lewis Farrakhan were working for a corporation, he would have been told, well, I'm sorry. It hasn't worked out. It's gone another round. So I think our leadership we need a new infusion of leadership, and I'm stepping to the forefront. And I'm candidating openly, unabashed, unapologetically, to lead our people to the promised land of educational opportunities, to the promised land of business opportunities, and to the promised land first of peace and the self, peace and the family, peace in the neighborhood, and peace with each other, especially African-American men, who would make a pledge to not be predators towards each other.
Last question. What do you think that if a lot of these famous leaders were to come back today and they would see the state of our people, you got people like, Booker T. Washington.
These men would die. They would be tortured. They couldn't believe that he now. We're gonna have a few minutes. Let's go do something. Booker T. Washington walked 800 miles barefoot from Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. You think he'd have any time to talk to a dropout?
No.
Well, he would be amazed that they got free education Pell Grant. And you mean you didn't go around the corner and go to school, to the community college? Booker T. Washington just died of a massive heart attack. Frederick Douglass, who couldn't read and write, you gonna tell him you can't read and write in America? I knew Fannie Lou Hamer. You didn't vote? What would she say? She would just have a heart. Did she go crazy? Darby Lodge, Muhammad, economic opportunity. You all blaming the white man. I finished him. I condemned him. I made him cut his tail off. Tail of his white supremacy collapsed on the very global stage. Now, these leaders would be just horrible. The great Dr. Benjamin Gladys made, perhaps he would be shocked if he came back to Morehouse. He would say, not my Morehouse. No, I'm just going to be honest. His pro-black colleges, the students aren't living up to the opportunity. We planned a campaign on that. Excellent. Nobody's pushing our people to do that. We're pushing our people to be slothful, to have a good time, to do what the hell they want to do, and I'm not going to be satisfied. Dr. May's spirit is with me. Dr. King's spirit is with me. John Elijah Muhammad's spirit is with me. Fannie Lou Hamer's spirit is with me. Mary McLeod Bethune is with me. Refinement of the great Sadie Mae Hawkins is with me. These great leaders' spirit there any questions from our audience?
We're going to go and take ask any questions. If anybody has any questions, they can just ask them in the comment section. If not, we're gonna go off at 8 o'clock, so we're going to wait the next couple minutes to ask.
And I want to tell the audience that I love you and I'm dedicated to serve you. I think you might want to know something about my background. Would you like to know something about my background? This is my Facebook audience.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about how you got into Islam.
All right, thank you.
I already know it, but tell me
how you should know. But this is the new audience. Most people don't know me. As you know, my name is Imam Alfred Muhammad. I was born in Lynchburg, Virginia.
We actually have a question. One of the commenters asked, how good is the Honorable Minister of Farrakhan? What do you think of him?
The question is, what do I think of Minister Farrakhan?
How good is Minister Farrakhan?
Well, Minister Farrakhan had been around for 60 years. He was my minister. I never followed him. I followed the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but he was my local minister. He's very talented. He is extraordinarily articulate. He is excellent as a counselor. He is an excellent listener. But I think the Honorable Minister of Laws, Louis Farrakhan, has failed our people. I don't think his program is sufficient. I know he's doing good, but I don't think he's measured up to the work and demand of the load that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad placed upon us. I think he spent too much time blaming the system and not enough time calling us to great responsibility. I think it's a little too late to be teaching our people that God is a man. I think we have to tell people that God is not a man. God doesn't go to the bathroom.
Well, for one, he had a massive turnout. He had a massive turnout in 2015. It was the anniversary of his main man. I had millions of people come out for the man. What do you think about that?
Well, that's good. I'm glad he did. I think that massive turnout should have turned out in Chicago. What do you miss that? I think he should have been better. I would have joined it if he marched through these neighborhoods to Compton, to Newark, and called out people back to mass mobilization. I'm not for showmanship. Mr. Farrakhan is one of the greatest pageanteers in the history of pageantry.
Mm-hmm.
He's done the greatest mobilization in the history of mobilization. But I am that. What does the Bible say? What happens when the salt loses its taste? It happens in April. Cut down to 7,000 murders. He is now responsible on the global stage. He's recognized by most people in America as African American leader. But now he has to feel the heat because he's been the kitchen.
All right, well. Okay.
And I love you, dear brother, for asking that question.
Well, that being said, we're going to go off the air now.
Do we have another question? Brother Alfred, by saying I thank our listening audience. I want you to know I appreciate you. I'm here to serve you. I'm also one to say that Hamza Yusuf, I invite him to a debate. That's a Caucasian leader. Many of you African Americans look up to him. I'm even open for a debate with Mr. Vonka. I'm open because I think the time is so serious that any leader that's standing for our people should be prepared for challenges. It's not an ego trip. It's not a personality contest. It's not even a popularity contest. This is a battle of truth. Some leaders, I would ask them, if they're Muslim, to pledge on the Quran that Allah's curse be upon them if they're telling other than the truth. And with those words, may God's peace be on you and His mercy. And I greet you in peace and say to you, good evening.
We got to go up here. On there. Peace be on our noble and honorable listeners. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. We'll see you tomorrow with Brother Imam Mubashir Akhtar. Thank you.